each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds Have Changed. This is a Wednesday. Tom Coys, to wrinkle your brain a bit, I'm going to take a little sabbatical from my diving into cosmology and the amazing lessons from science that we can certainly apply to our faith. I'm going to go back into history. I'm going to go back into one of my favorite topics. I'm sure you've picked this up over the times you've been listening to The Winds of Change and Brain Wrinkling Father Coys. It's the topic of the relationship between church and state. It's just always around
us. Holy, here we go again, Batman.
That is, we're going to go back to it. And I want to do so by trying to tell the story of Father Isaac Hecker. You might know that name, you might not. It's not really a household word, but something that is a little bit of a household word for Catholic folks is the Paulists. Father Isaac Hecker was the founder of the Paulist priests, and you might know that it was the first, and it was founded by Father Hecker in the 1800s, mid-1800s, especially to try to address a problem that was going on, that he saw going on, that's still going on today.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's brain, you're gonna be very much brain wrinkled. And I have to confess, I love this guy, but I'm cautious and there's some things I don't like about him. Isn't that so much the truth with so many people? He's not Jesus. Even our great heroes, we sometimes have disagreements with in one way or another. He's a hero of mine because he really loved Catholicism, and he really loved the American experiment, we'll call it. So it's this story has a lot to do with the beauty of being a Catholic in America. And yet, I'm going to try to point out, if I get enough time through this quick hour that we have together, there's 14 errors along this story that I think if things were done a little differently, the whole world would have changed in a different way, shall we say. And I wanna start with a sort of conclusion that this comes from a movie that's on www.form.org. It's called Isaac Hecker and the Journey of Catholic America. At the end of the movie, it's about an hour. It's not too long to watch. You should watch it. Do you know what Formed is? I hope all you good Catholics know what Formed.org is. I call it Netflix for Catholics. Anyways, at the end of the story of Hecker, and you'll find out why, he said, well, Vatican II came along, which was kind of a validation of everything that Father Hecker stood for, which was slapped down in days gone by. And I want to take a scalpel, I want to analyze step by step part of the story, some of the errors that now, from hindsight, we could see could have done a, could have, should have done a, could have, should have, would have, right? But of course, we can't change the past. All we can do is try to change the future, as it were, right? Doing the best we can today, right? I thought of this in the context, can I share this with you too? My good old friend, Bob Barron, Bishop Barron, you know, if you're paying attention to the sermons during this summertime, we've been getting a big dose of the parables of St. Matthew, of Jesus, found in Matthew. And in the parable of the weeds and the wheat, or the wheat and the tares, Bishop Bob has a very interesting take on that, which I'm gonna say, well done, beautiful lesson, except there's always an I think he fails in one crucial area, and you could apply it in many different topics in theology, philosophy, morality, etc. Here's what he's using, the parable of the weeds and the wheat. And he goes this way, let's see.
A corrupt community. Is the corruption evil? Yeah, of course it is. All right, I know, just go in there and get it out. Well, just like the tooth. Whatever there is that's corrupt in, let's say, a parish, is parasitic upon what's good and healthy in the parish.
I have to stop there. See, he's using the parable of the weeds and the wheat. They grow up together, and the weeds are parasitic on the wheat. He's trying to say that our Lord was warning us how difficult it is to separate good and evil in this world. So let them grow together, and at the end of time, the angels will come and separate. The ultimate separation will be between heaven and hell. And that there's good wisdom in that, and a lot of times you do let things alone enough. However, there's a however, right? Well, anyways, here he goes on a little bit more.
Has to be. It's just the way it works. You say, but that community, boy, that thing is rife with sin and with corruption. Yeah, but to get that out without destroying the community itself, you got to be very careful. You know, it's a lesson that I think young priests often have to learn. Because they'll get into a parish, it's a typical rookie mistake. And they see right away, oh yeah, this is a mess. this thing is not working. Yeah, okay, right. But the wise pastor might say, uh-huh, but you can't go in there with two hands and just rip it out. You've got to be extremely delicate and careful to...
Okay, he's making a good point. I'm going to say... That's true. Rookie priests will sometimes make that mistake, and I'll even admit that I think I made that mistake at different ways. You see problems, and you want to fix things, and you go in with a little bit of gangbuster enthusiasm. But the mistake I think the bishop is making, or it's common for almost all leaders of sorts, it's easy to say what not to do.
Wow. Yeah. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's easy for leaders to tell their flock or followers or worker bees what not to do. But if you're not telling the worker bees what to do, you're making another mistake. And unfortunately, that's, I think, the mistake that the bishops have made, at least from my perspective. In other words, let me use a plain example. I've tried at different times to help improve the spiritual, Catholic identity, spirituality of the parish, of the group of people, by helping them understand the virtue, the truth of humani vitae. For that, in this modern world, you get slapped down. Just don't do that. That's like what Bishop Barron is talking about when he says, don't go in there and just rip it out. Okay. And I've been told a number of times you can't talk about those things. But of course, they're true. You know, a bishop, as I've been told a number of times, you can't talk about it that way. Of course, you're teaching the truth, but you're teaching in a way that's not helpful. To which I say, can you show me the way to teach it correctly? And I get crickets. There seems to be no example on how to do it right. All we get is what not to do. It's kind of similar in the secular world. If you're building something, contractors always have to.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's brain wrinkling. If you're a contractor and you're working on something, you know you got to get permits for different stages of the project. And one thing that permit people are good at is telling you what not to do, where your mistakes are. But they're completely inept at trying to tell you what to do, as it were. So anyways, okay, we're going to try to dive into the story of Father Hecker and see where some of the errors might have been and some of his virtues. Okay, so the story begins in the early 1830s. I'm coming to you from that little church called St. James of Sagbridge. We were started one of the first parishes in the diocese, 1833. So this is right around that time. It was in 1836. That a bunch of scholars and professors gathered on the 200th anniversary of the founding of Harvard University right there in Boston. Isn't that amazing? Harvard was celebrating its 200th birthday in 1836. Wow. So that was like 1636, way before. It was started as soon as the colonies got formed. Anyways, there's four important figures that were part of what became known as the Transcendentalist Club, the Transcendentalists. I kind of like that word because it's very close to a Catholic term called Transcendentals, beauty, truth, goodness. Oneness. Those things are transcendentals, meaning they're part of God. They transcend our divided, fractured, materialistic existence. They touch upon eternal and universal truths, realities. We say they're all found in God, ultimately. But these transcendentalists were not really following Thomas Aquinas, but they were knocking on the door in different ways. So the four main characters you might recognize: Henry David Thoreau. Henry David Thoreau, you know, the guy who lived out in nature and wrote about how you commune with nature. Another one was Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he was big on self-reliance. We have to be our own man. Of course, those are good themes. Another one was Bronson Alcott, not so famous, but he was big on trying to reform education, even at that early time, 1836, okay? We're talking the United States, a very baby country. And the fourth one was Orestes Bronson. You might have heard me talk about this guy before. Orestes Bronson eventually he became a Catholic, but at the time of the Transcendentalist and where they gathered together, the farm that Henry David Thoreau started was called Brook Farm. So they would gather there and sit around, smoke cigars, and talk. It's a fun thing to do, is it not? Anyways, Orestes Bronson, interestingly enough, his contribution to the transcendentalist discussion was his constant appeal for care for the poor. It's interesting that he's the one of those four I just named that became Catholic. And it makes some sense to me because Catholics take the Trinity seriously, which means you can't be just satisfied with God. My faith is just something between me and God alone. If you take the Trinity seriously, you have to realize that the Holy Spirit is this mysterious part of God that is, can be found, that is found, can be found in others around you. In other words, you have to have love for a neighbor, not just love for God, okay? So anyways, the young Isaac Hecker, he got interested in getting out of the big city. He was born and raised in New York City, and they were very, very poor at beginning. His father dies young, and his two older brothers quit school to start a little bakery. So he was working for the family bakery. It wasn't that successful at the beginning, like most companies, but it does again eventually become very, very successful. Anyways, in those early days, Isaac Hecker wants to leave New York. Oh, and before he leaves New York, he has already had a mystical experience. He claims, and he's written about like a visitation of an angel, something that truly caught his attention, his imagination. He knew it wasn't just dreaming. He really considered it a supernatural vision. And so, not knowing much Catholic catechism or doctrine and everything, it was a mystical experience. And so these transcendentalists up in Boston were talking about mystical things, mysterious things. And so he thought, hey, I'm going to go there and learn from them. So he does get up to Henry David Thoreau's Brook Farm, becomes friends with Thoreau. But he doesn't stay there long. He's a little disenchanted with Thoreau's Brook Farm, his little utopian village, I guess you can call it. And he leaves, and there's an interesting quote that Hecker wrote as he left Thoreau's farm. He found another farm called, Fruitland. That was the next one. So, but he was criticizing Thoreau's farm because he said, it seems like the men just sit around and talk. The women do all the work, and the men don't know anything about farming. Isn't that an interesting critique? Something us men must always keep in mind. There has to be a balance of labor within a marriage, within a family, as it were. And so he sensed that the highest form of life, the ideal society or the ideal man, is not just a thinker, but a thinker and a doer. He's a spirit with a body, and therefore, he left the Thoreau's company. So, anyways, he goes back to New York, he's contemplating, what am I going to do with my life? He could join the family flour and bakery business, which at this time then it was starting to become quite successful, and a rich, happy, successful life in the business world looked like very, very, very possible for him. But he also had this mystical spirit. He remembers the vision of the angel, etc. And he decides, kind of explore the Catholic priesthood. He becomes Catholic, and then soon he starts thinking about being a Catholic. Okay, I think it's time for our first break. Okay, Nick, let's leave Isaac Hecker there as he becomes a priest. Let's see, he was that was about in 1845, something like that. It's a little before the American Civil War, of course. Anyways, let's take our first break. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You're listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI, on 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
You are invited to attend the Father's Tom Art Show, inspiring faith in God through beauty with Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes, Sunday afternoon, August 13th from 2 until 4. You'll enjoy original art by both priest artists, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes. Stroll through the different galleries featuring original art while also enjoying a light summer sangria wine and cheese buffet. Learn how beauty can lead to a deeper longing for the divine artist. That's the Father's Tom Art Show with both artist priests, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes. Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4, August 13th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 South Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. The Father's Tom Art Show is co-sponsored by Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church and the Sagbridge Mission Society.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button, or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, for Brain Wrinkling Wednesday, if you're listening live or whatever other day you're listening to. Okay, so I'm trying to tell the story of a Father Isaac Hecker, because it's a tremendous story that deals with the relationship between church and state and how America came to be, what our problems are, the relationship between Catholic Rome and Catholics in America who are supposed to be loyal to Rome, and the many conflicts that have arisen, the anti-Catholic spirit and now the anti-Christian spirit. You know, I really wish many of my Protestant Christian brothers and sisters who are now sort of like, they're realizing, wait a minute, government public schools aren't teaching Christianity. It's exactly what us Catholics felt when government Protestant schools weren't teaching the fullness of Christianity, namely Catholicism. So there should be a kind of a camaraderie between Protestants who are disenchanted with government schools and Catholics who came up with the idea of Catholic schools to sort of counteract the errors that were found so easily. Anyway, so we got Father, Isaac Hecker becomes a priest, and he becomes Catholic and right away starts thinking of becoming a priest. That sometimes happens when you convert when you're older. he saw the importance of that major conversion. An interesting revelation he has, or insight he has, together with Orestes Bronson, this the guy who kind of becomes known as a great defender of Catholicism in the anti-Catholic spirit going on in America. Orestes Bronson becomes a Catholic, and they both say that they felt this strong pull towards Catholicism. And they saw it as a more radical step than moving from one Protestant denomination to another. They both recognized you can go from Methodist to Presbyterian to Anglican to Baptist to Church of Christ to First Square Gospel Church, all these different denominations. And it doesn't affect you that much. The spirit going on inside of you is what's going, what's leading you the way. It's not so much the different teachings of the different denominations. But anyways, to become a Catholic, he says, is a big thing. It touches on the eternal. To become a Catholic, it has the air of you can't go back. Once you swim the Tiber, you can't go back. That's a very interesting twist, isn't it? Ralph Waldo Emerson, his old friend from the commune, the Brook Farm, Ralph Waldo Emerson is horrified, and he tells him, how can you be tricked into following such an intellectually impoverished cult? He's criticizing. He thinks you're just abandoning your sense of following your mind, your reason, where reason would take you. But of course, Isaac Hecker sort of sees, no, it's my mind that's open to a different kind of sense of transcendentalism.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, so the great mysteries and the great spirituality of Catholicism, with all the different mystic saints that have come along, are not anti-intellectual, but they push your intellect to a different level, a higher level, you could say. And that sort of makes sense. Saints make sense to me, and if it makes sense to you, you're getting that same spirit. As a matter of fact, Father Hecker begins to see the United States as a ripe landscape upon which to bring all of America, all Americans, to this higher level. He was critical of the idea that America's success was first and foremost economic. Boy, doesn't that make us think of, you know, how many immigrants want to come to the United States for a better life? And the better life usually means higher economic status, where if you're really going to be tuned into God and spirituality, you're going to have to recognize that there's a richness to the saints' lives that us non-saints haven't found yet, and you could compensate your yearning for the higher transcendental goods by your material possessions, but you will find yourself falling short. Anyway, so another part, the chapter in his life goes, he becomes a redemptress. You know, when you decide you want to be a priest, you got to figure out what kind of priest. And so he is hooked up with the redemptress. And the redemptress were especially a German group. Mostly German priests were part of the redemptress. And so, but he was attracted to it. And he had German blood, but he wasn't much of a German. Kind of like me, unfortunately. I've got Slovak blood, but I'm not much of a Slovak. There's a lot of us third and fourth generation Americans that say the same thing. Anyways, this was happening back in the mid-1800s, and he had the same kind of feel. So, but the Redemptorist did have one thing that he really liked and it attracted him to, and that was the parish missions. He loved going all around the country giving parish missions, and they were a powerful activity, event. especially in a small town somewhere, there'd be a great, there'd be advertising for the parish mission is coming, Father so-and-so will be here, et cetera. There'd be, it would be a big event. And the preaching was powerful, was very good, was very dramatic. And so Father Hecker enjoyed it. And I could just see that happiness, that beauty in sharing your faith with those who are interested. I was recently talking to people. And, you know, that's something many people, if you are fully Catholic, you don't have that many opportunities to have what we call a captive audience, right? Us priests, when we preach, are usually preaching to people in church. So you got a captive audience. You lay people, when you're talking about stuff in your workplace or at home or at wherever, you don't necessarily have a captive audience. And so you got to keep your mouth shut at different times. But when you do have somebody who wants to learn, wants to know more, it's a great joy. I just want you to seek out those kind of experiences with people. I tend to assume that most people don't want to learn, don't want to be preached at. People even say, I don't like preachy preachers, or I don't like preachy Catholics. So most of us don't do that. I want to challenge you, as I challenge myself, that maybe people do want to learn more. So it's important for us to create situations where you can get into it more. Anyways, okay, so here's my first of the heirs in this list of heirs in the story of Father Hecker. Let's see, where's my note? Okay. The Pope commits a kind of error. The Pope at that time, I think, was Pius IX. Pio Nono, Pope Pius IX. He's a good guy. But he makes an error primarily because America was growing. It was becoming, you know, a formidable place. And if you're over there in Europe, you don't pay that much attention to it, but you hear about America growing. And one thing I'm sad to say the Catholic Church didn't say to Americans growing up in America, Catholics growing up in America, they didn't say, why don't you embrace your new homeland? Embrace this new nationality. They didn't say that because there was too much skepticism. There was too many stories coming about that the Protestant Americans were attacking the Catholics. The Protestant Americans were saying Catholics don't apply, etc. It would have been life-changing, world-changing, history-changing had the Pope encouraged those Catholics leaving Europe, going to the United States, to embrace your new homeland as your new national homeland. But, you know, the very idea of the United States being a new nation, I think, confounded so many of the Europeans, especially Catholic Europeans and especially hierarchs in the Catholic Church. To even call the United States a new nation didn't seem right because America, the United States, was filled with so many different nationalities. There are so many different nationalities, ethnicities. You can't have one nation with multiple ethnicities because in Europe, an ethnicity was almost the same as your nationality. What ethnicity are you? Well, I'm French. What country do you live in? France. What's your ethnicity? I'm German. What country do you come from? Germany. et cetera. You get my picture. But they could, you couldn't say that about the United States of America. There was a nation forming which didn't identify with one ethnicity. I think that different ethnicities all tried to make it their ethnicity one way or another. But they failed. We are on this conglomeration of ethnicities. And so I think the church made a mistake in missing the opportunity to point out the fact that, hey, that new country over there, America, is a lot like Catholicism, because we don't want to restrict Catholicism to one ethnicity. We want Catholicism to be universal. So why don't we encourage our Catholics who are over there growing up in America and living in America to embrace this, because they might have a really good influence. Anyways, but that didn't happen. Back to Father Hecker, he liked the missions that he was sent on, but many times when he would preach, he saw a lot of non-Catholics in the congregation. He thought that was kind of cool, as I think I would, and he would see it as an opportunity to share with them the Catholic faith, and he would then start to have post-mission meetings separate just for the non-Catholics. And I'm sure he influenced and he made a lot of converts that way. Unfortunately, here comes heir number two by the superior of the Redemptorists. At that time, it was a guy by the name of Father George Rouen, who was the superior, probably stationed in Boston. And he heard about the Father Hecker and his buddies, that they were having separate meetings for non-Catholics. He says in no uncertain terms, yeah, this is the crazy part. To me, to most of us, I'm sure it sounds very crazy, but it's not that unusual about a mistake we make today. Anyways, Father Rouen, the superior, told Father Hecker, your mission is only for the Catholics. Don't be working with the non-Catholics. Now, to me, that sounds stupid. That was a dumb mistake. He certainly could have said, you know, use a different style, use a different tact. I'm sure the superior must have been thinking, you'll be corrupted by them instead of you changing them. And, well, of course, that is possible, but not if you're real strong in the faith, as it were. This was in the time when there are a lot of fights and even riots. There's a famous story about Bishop John Hughes from New York. The Protestants were on a march and a riot, and they were going to burn down the original St. Patrick's Cathedral before the one that's there now, of course. It was a smaller wooden building, and they marched, and Bishop Hughes put out, I don't think he sent out a text message. Somehow he got the word out to all the Irish in New York, and a bunch of Irish came around, and as the Protestants were marching on St. Patrick, he said, you don't burn down this church. I have an army of Irishmen here, and for every Catholic church you burn down, these guys are going to burn down two of your churches. What guts. And so they didn't. So Bishop Hughes, being a tough Mick, saved the day in that sense. You know, that reminds me, a good story. I was down in Tennessee a couple years ago, and I heard about a story. A priest down there told me that it was in Gatlinburg by the Smoky Mountains, and they heard that Black Lives Matter people came to town and were staying at the Holiday Inn. They found out that their plan was to march to City Hall and either deface or destroy a statue of Dolly Parton. If you know anything about Gatlinburg and the Smoky Mountain areas, she's a superstar. superstar in a lot of places, but especially down there. So the 14 or 16, whatever it was, Black Lives Matters people, they were going to march to that hall, and they were going to do what they've done in other cities and tear down a statue. Somebody got word out to a number of the locals, and they surrounded City Hall and the statue of Dolly Parton with all their concealed and carries, which weren't too concealed at the time, and they formed a circle around the City Hall, and the Black Lives Matter people turned around and went home. Very similar. So we have that in the modern world, and they really are defending a Christian hero. I'm going to call Dolly Parton as a Christian hero of today. Obviously, she's a wonderful singer and all that, but she also is a faithful Christian. And anyways, the Black Lives Matter were going to try to attack her statue, not just because they didn't like her music, but she represented that Christian element of our country that has to be weeded out, at least in their mind. Same thing that was kind of going on with in New York. Okay, oh boy, let's take another break. This hour is going pretty fast, so we'll get around. We'll get to the meat of the story hopefully soon. All right, so let's take our next break. Okay, Nick. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back. Father Coyes here. I'm trying to relate the story of Father Isaac Hecker, who was the founder of the Paulists, a group. Some of you may know the Paulist Press. They have a lot of music books, liturgy books, and all that kind of good stuff. I'm afraid I'm going to have to say that they've lost, they've been infected in a bad way, though they have a good record in so many different ways as well. So we got Father Isaac Hecker, and he's trying to do his missions, he's trying to see how the freedom that we have here in America allows him to go into towns and set up a mission, very much in the spirit of many Protestant ministers who set up a tent and did what they do, altar calls and all the rest. It's kind of what that old Neil Diamond song, Brother Loves Traveling Salvation Show, was all about. Remember that song? I'll find it for you sometime. Anyways, so here's in Father Hecker's spirit, he saw America needs Catholicism. He says, echoing what Timothy Gordon has said, that Catholic podcaster who says America without Rome will fail. So this is what Isaac Hecker was saying. So he goes like this. Let's see if I can
get it. The Catholic Church contains the ideal of democracy. And in the long run, the church will be found necessary for democracy's preservation, as well for its continued advance towards perfect human brotherhood.
Not satisfied with simply doing missions, he wrote his first book, Questions of the Soul. Hecker's book tried to address a larger audience about the compatibility of Catholicism and American culture.
So this establishes him.
So there he's saying, his book, Questions of the Soul, he said was written for a wider audience. But what he's saying is very much not accepted by the wider audience of today, namely that America needs Catholicism to survive in order to reach its full potential. I would say almost the opposite is in the minds of many, even religious. Leave the others alone. I'm forced as a priest to have to deal all the time with the workings and the ministry that go on within a parish. And unfortunately, I'm not out in the world quite as much as many of you lay people are. And so you sense the need for the beauties of Catholicism even more than I do. Well, I see it when so often when people come and they're not catechized, etc. But it's an interesting angle to start evangelization with, maybe not so much Bible stories, but with questions of the soul. What questions do you have? What is your ultimate destiny? Why is the world messed up? Why are families messed up? It's an interesting opening, as it were. Fortunately or unfortunately, here's where the story takes a twist, because he puts in there the idea that America is almost the best soil for evangelizing. Anyways, and you could see how he might appreciate that, because it's a good free country, and in a good free country, they're going to let you proselytize. Though now even that word today is sort of a negative pejorative term. Pope Francis even said you're not supposed to proselytize, and he tried to make a distinction between proselytizing and evangelizing. And unfortunately, in some ways, you could criticize that comment as a distinction without a difference. If you don't explain the difference, you're just ending up confusing people instead of opening their minds to something. Anyways, back to Father Rouen, the superior of the Redemptress, as Father Hecker's book, Questions of the Soul, becomes a bestseller, and he becomes sort of a sought-after speaker and everything. He takes on a sort of superstar status. He again, Father Rouen again, says, your mission is to the Catholics, not to the non-Catholics, echoing what I call this error that happened. So the other Redemptress priests are on Father Hecker's side, and they sort of elect him or choose him to go to Rome and get the Pope's blessing, give them permission to evangelize the non-Catholics. So he gets on a boat and goes to Rome. Now here's one little mistake. Well, maybe it couldn't have happened. The mistake is that Father Hecker doesn't get the permission of Father Rouen, the superior. I guess he figures, like we say, better to ask forgiveness than permission, right? So he jumps on the boat, he goes all the way to Rome, and he goes to the superior of the Redemptress in Rome, the main big guy, boy, that term has.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And the meeting goes pretty bad fast because the superior in Rome says, did you read my letter? The letter that the superior in Rome wrote to Father Hecker back in the States. Father Hecker says, yes, I read it. And the superior says, I told you, don't come without your superior's permission. You don't have your superior's permission, so get out. I'm going to have to relieve you. He was canceled. What a mistake, that superior. He was trying to just teach the lesson of obedience, right? I told you don't come, you disobeyed my orders, so you can't possibly be a good priest. I'm going to have to deal with you such that, without hearing anything of these other arguments. So his old friend Orestes Bronson hears about Father Hecker's problems over there in Rome, and he writes in some column, he likes Father Hecker because they were both converts together, sort of like RCIA students, not exactly, but they both became Catholics for about the same time and sort of for the same reasons of sorts. But anyways, he says, Father Hecker sees the beauty of the American experiment, but he's naive about applying Americanism, which is fundamentally political, to the Catholic Church, and here's the key, without introducing heresies. So that, I really think, leads to another error that it could have done. If American Catholics would have been more in general, nervous or worried about or attuned to heresies than they were, it's a little high expectations for general Catholics to be good theologians. But if they were a little better theologians, you know, it was too common because you're living in the same town with a lot of Protestants and they seem like good and wonderful people, and many people intermarried and et cetera. That idea that you would never marry a non-Catholic was wearing, that was popular, but it was wearing away because a lot of Christians were fine people. And anyways, if they would have taken Orestes Bronson's insight about separating your love for America from your love for Catholic doctrine, we might have gotten a lot farther. In other words, you could say what Thomas More said to Roper. Do you remember the movie Man for All Seasons? When his daughter wanted to marry a lawyer, a young lawyer, and Thomas More, being a lawyer and a judge, probably would have liked his daughter to marry a lawyer, but the son-in-law, the future son-in-law, was too enamored with Lutheranism and the Protestant Reformation, and so he said, "You can't marry my daughter while you're a heretic." And Roper says, "Well, that's a word I don't like." And Thomas More responds by saying, "It's not a likable word." In other words, this future son-in-law says, "Well, you offended me," and Thomas More would say, "I don't. Well, you're offending me, or I'm concerned with something more than whether I'm offending you or not." It's crazy. It's a delicate operation, isn't it? So, anyways, that's another error. If American Catholics, it's almost out of this time. Maybe I'll end with this. If the American Catholics could have embraced what is noble about America while watching out for heresies, we would have we would have made much greater strides in converting America. And even that very phrase, some people will say, well, why would we even want to try to convert America? Well, if Catholicism is good for the soul, for one person or a family, then it can and should be good for a society. And what? But then we got to pick and choose. We got to say, well, tell me some of the good things about America. And I'm going to point out three right here. Let's pray about these. Let's think about these, because it's where we can and should put our foot forward. Number one, America was a society, a new nation that had lots of nationalities. It's hard for us to appreciate. That in itself is Catholic in the sense that Catholicism is a truth and a spirit, a religion that allows, that doesn't want to be nailed down to one nationality or another. People don't go about on purpose nailing down their faith to the nation, but it happens by osmosis, it happens unintentionally, etc. So, Nick, we're just almost out of time. Do you want to get in that third? I think there's one last, there's another break. Do you want to get that in now before we sign off? You break right in if you can. So the first thing that's good and beautiful about America is that it's a nation of nationalities, like Catholicism. The second thing is that there's a strong sense of freedom. Obviously, anyone who is patriotic today will defend their patriotism because America is the land of the free, right? But we have to put that in context of theology, and the religion that did away with freedom was Martin Luther and his Protestant Reformation. He's the one who said the soul is in bondage and there is no true freedom. You know, that's where the high ideals of following Christ can't be done in freedom unless you are, in a sense, forced to by the grace of God. So in the American genre, we don't force people to convert. And that's something of a virtue, is it not? I've often said that to people, even though I'd like them to convert, I would never force you to convert. We've had what have been called rice Christians, as you give enough food and you hope they become Catholic. But anyways, that's a beautiful thing about Catholicism. And the third one is you're supposed to win people's hearts through their minds and by good education. You trust your mind. You trust the importance of an intellectual discussion, which counteracts the other pillar of Protestantism, solo fide. And that's what got Pope Benedict in trouble when he said that some religions are not open to reason as much as Catholicism is. Okay, I got through about half my notes here on Father Hecker. I'm going to have to pick this up again because it's a beautiful story, and it just is ripe for that great theme of the relationship between church and state, which we all deal with day in and day out. Okay? I'm Father Tom Coys. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are 88.5 FM, WSFI, and WNDZ 750 AM.
When the world makes no sense, do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is wrought. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The